Thank you. Steve Weeks here. The Ultimate Podcast. You know, I want to thank Mr. Steel Wind. That's his name on Board Game Geek, who keeps posting the thread advertising the Ultimate Podcast. I really appreciate it since I cannot post now. I was banished from Board Game Geek, but I was reading through that last post he did and some of the comments there. One guy said, talking about Mr. Fabulous, that he hated Mr. Fabulous because my voice talent was not up to the task of that. But I got a kick out of that because soon after that, I was watching the Andy Griffith Show, and it was the episode where Goober and Gomer come in, and Gomer wants Goober to do his impression of Cary Grant for Andy, and Goober goes, Judy, 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 Judy. And I couldn't even do that good. I can't even do an impression of Goober doing a bad impression of Cary Grant. But so, look, you want Rich Little, you go to Las Vegas. Okay, this is free. Okay. All right. We got a good show for you. I'm really excited about this show because we're going all the way across the pond to talk to Matt Thrower over in England. Matt was a great guy to talk to, and we talked to him about a lot of things, and we're going to talk to Matt right now. Matt Thrower, you started the Fortress Ameritrash. Can you tell us why you decided to start that website there, that blog?
Well, it's a less interesting story than you might imagine, really. I'd just been looking into doing a blog of my own for a long time, but I didn't have enough interesting things to say by myself or enough time to post regularly to do
right.
it. And when the whole Ameritrash thing kicked off on Board Game Geek, you know, I mean, obviously it's a genre of games that I'm really interested in. They're the games I prefer to play. And it seemed like an obvious angle to do a blog. So I mailed Michael Barnes and Robert Martin and Lajos Bron. Do you know Lajos?
Right. Now, can you tell us about the gaming scene there in the UK? Are the American style games really more popular there than the Euros or what?
Well, that's a really difficult question for me to answer because where I am, where I live around here, there isn't a huge gaming scene. The impression that I get from people that I talk to is that the answer is, well, it's kind of a 50-50 job. You know, there's a couple of clubs around here that I've been to who play mainly Euro games. There's another club where they play a lot of miniature games, and they play some Ameritrash games. But I mostly play games with friends of mine, you know, friends and family.
Exactly, yeah. Now, I was looking on your profile. It looks like you're heavily into miniatures. Is that still true, or is it more board games now for you?
No, it's more board games now for me. I was into miniatures for many years. I used to play a lot of Warhammer and games like that. And I was always endlessly bitching about the fact that Games Workshop wouldn't fix simple rules problems. You know, I'd look at the rules problems
right.
of Warhammer.
Right.
Yeah, and I just go, you know, there's easy fixes here. There's easy things to do. And I never understood why they didn't put out, you know, corrections and supplements and whatnot to sort those things out, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I actually made a point of saying this on, you know, Games Workshop forums and things like that. And one day, one of the designers actually answered me, and they said, basically, look, you know, for you guys who are interested in just playing this as a game, because I was never that bothered about the painting aspect of the hobby, you know, the collecting miniatures, painting them. It just seemed really time-consuming, a bit
yes.
boring to me, really.
Right.
And one of them actually asked me, he said, look, you know, if you're so interested in doing all this, why don't you just go off and play board games instead? Why play miniatures games? And I thought about that for a couple of days, and I thought, fucking hell, he's right.
Exactly, yeah. Now, here in the U.S., you were talking about the Game Designers Workshop. Those games really seem to get a lot of respect here in the U.S. And seem to, a lot of people have a lot of admiration for those games. Why do you think that is?
Do you mean the miniatures games?
I'm thinking more in terms of Dungeon Quest, Fury of Dracula, those type of games.
Because they're really good games is the answer. I have a you hear a lot of people complaining about the term Ameritrash because it's trashy, you know, because it gives the wrong impression, which is just bollocks, frankly. But the reason that I have a problem with it is because it doesn't acknowledge the fact that a lot of the best games from the 80s are published here in the UK by Games Workshop.
Right, exactly.
And the reason I think they're popular is because Games Workshop, I think back in those days, they were the only company pretty much who were publishing games with high production quality. They were one of the first games companies to take on, you know, you'd get good quality cardboard, you'd get the miniatures, you know, you'd get all that stuff in the box. And people talk about Ameritrash games being interested in theme, and I think that good components in a game, I'm not against cardboard, I'm not a plastic Nazi, but good components in a game are an important...
I like that, plastic Nazi, that's good.
Well, that's not my term, that's, I can't remember his name now. Cletus the Black or some guy on Board Game Geek came
right
up with that term, I think.
Right. Now we talk about this Ameritrash thing. We tend to give Robert Martin the credit, but I think it goes back farther to a list that you created on Board Game Geek. I tend to call you the John Locke of the movement and Robert Martin a founding father, which I think is pretty accurate analogy. Would you say agree with that or no?
Well, you flatter me. I think I'm not quite sure I'd go that far. What I always felt about that list that I created, the 7 Reasons to Hate Euro Games, I called it, which is a bit of a toss title, but there you go. The thing that always interests me about that list is that's the first time that I saw a lot of the people who were later to become kind of like, you know, well-known names in the Ameritrash movement come together and post in the same place.
Right.
Uh-huh. But it was a negative list. It was posting against things. It was saying, "Look, here's some things that annoy me about Euro games." It didn't crystallize or anything positive. It didn't give the whole thing a name, because I think that the fact that Robert Martin came along and gave it a name, I think, is really important.
Right. Now, there must have been a reason that you posted that. Were you getting slightly annoyed at the Euro bias on that site?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you call it a Euro bias or what you want to call it, but yeah, I mean, I got annoyed that I'd come along to that site. I'd been hanging around the site for several years, and there's just the prevailing current of opinion is that there's a whole bunch of stuff which is bad in game design or outdated in game design. And for the most part, I think that's just not true.
Right.
I just wanted to hold up my hand and say, hey, look, you know, come on, stop here a minute and have a look at these things and say, you know, are these really bad? Are they all, at least, are they as bad as they're being made out to be?
Yeah, we were talking about Dungeon Quest, and I actually had to go to England, right away to England, order it from England to get a copy of Dungeon Quest, and I'm glad I did. It was a great game. Do you agree with that, or do you have a copy of Dungeon Quest? What do you think?
I do have a copy of Dungeon Quest, yes. I haven't played it in a long time. A lot of my older games are in storage at the moment, but I'm going to pull them out at some point. But it's a game I always really enjoyed. I'm not a big fan of dungeon crawl games generally, because if I want to do a dungeon crawl, I'll sit down and play a role-playing game. Or at least
right.
I would have done. You know,
so you came into the hobby through role-playing, is that right?
I did, yes. I started out as a role player primarily, and from then I got into miniatures, and from there I collected a few of those Games Workshop board games back in the 80s, but all that time, really, it was role-playing and miniatures. The wholesale conversion to board gaming is a relatively recent thing for me over the last few years.
And you attribute that mainly to the time factor, or what?
So, sorry, what do you mean?
You attribute your movement to board games. It's just the lack of time you have for role-playing, or what?
Well, I got bored with role-playing because role-playing is really dependent on the people that you play with. And I moved about a lot, and I played with a lot of different groups, and some of them were a lot better than others, and in the end I just got bored of gaming with bad groups.
Right, right.
With the miniatures thing, it was partly a lack of time and just partly a frustration that, as I said, that Games Workshop weren't sorting out these good games. And there are other companies who are guilty of that as well. People issue sets of miniatures rules. The miniatures rules, by their very nature, are kind of a bit open-ended, and they throw up problems because, you know, there's all the open-ended move around the table and stuff like that.
Right.
And I was just interested in getting more into games where there was more strategy, I suppose.
Now, let's get back to Fortress of Ameritrash. You wrote a great article, I think, just today, or was it yesterday or today, about the player elimination. And for the and the whole issue on Titan, and for those without going into the article in depth, can you just give us in a nutshell, why you rate Titan a 10 and why you think player elimination is not really a problem?
Well, I write Titan at 10 it's very easy to say that the games that I tend to enjoy the most are games that you can broadly classify as multiplayer conflict games, and they come by their nature with a whole bunch of problems. I mean, they are problems. They're not as big a problem as the Euro community would make out, but they are problems, things like king-making and kill the leader and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
And Titan solves all those at a stroke. It has none of those problems.
Right.
The movement system is what does it. You can't go chasing down people just because they took out a stack of yours 3 turns ago and you're still pissed about it. You just can't do that. And I find it very satisfying to play for that reason. And I like the way it has both, you know, really deep and satisfying strategic and tactical aspect as well. So that's why I rated it a 10.
Uh-huh.
In terms of player elimination, I said it on that article, really. I don't rate it as being a problem because if you're knocked out of a game, I mean, if I'm knocked out of a game that I'm interested in watching, I'll sit and watch the game. That's not an issue.
Right.
And I'll enjoy that. Or if I'm knocked out of a game that I'm interested in playing, then I can hang around and play a video game, or I can read a book, or, you know, and an oft-forgotten thing in game circles, I think, is you can just sit around and chat to people.
Right.
You know, you can actually do some socializing. For me, gaming is very much just kind of a bit of a social framework, really. It's a place you get around a board with your mates, and it's just something you can help pass and structure the time with while you have a good chat.
Yeah, I think one of the real disturbing trends in gaming for me is along these lines, is they're taking the competitive spirit out of the game. And it more becomes more of a exercise where the winner is not so obvious. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not so sure that's true. I'm not so sure that Euro games take the competitive nature out of games, because in most of them there is a winner. And one thing I like about victory points, I don't know if it's Euro games particularly, but one thing I like about victory points is that you actually get a gradation. You know who
right.
comes first, you know who comes second. You know, I actually think that increases the competitiveness in some way.
Oh, okay.
What worries me more about the whole thing in terms of player elimination is I remember some guy posted about Puerto Rico. This is ages ago, I don't know who it was, and he was saying that Puerto Rico, when his group played Puerto Rico, they all sat around the board for an hour and a half in intense concentration, silence, you know, playing that game, totally focused on the game. I think it was a list I made about immersion, actually, where this came up.
Right, uh-huh.
And I just thought, how sad is that?
Exactly.
You know, they're focused on the competition, yeah, but what about all the other great stuff that's going on? You know, what, you're sat around the board with people you know who presumably you like, you know, why not just exchange a few words, for God's sake?
Exactly. Let's talk about the Euro game market. In your opinion, do you think it's declining?
Yes, I think it is. I think it's definitely declining. I think I have a really strong feeling that there are trends in gaming. And back in the 80s, nobody thought about Ameritrash games because that's all there was. And in the early part of the 90s as well, nobody gave it a label, nobody needed it. And then over sort of like the mid to late 90s, the Eurogame study took over, and now they're the dominant thing. And I think we're now witnessing them kind of like slipping out of the frame.
Right. Tell me, what, as far as board game, what is your, you may have touched on this already, but what is your big pet peeve in gaming, something that really bothers you in board games?
Well, I mean, there's all sorts of things. Oh, I don't know. I don't like bad losers. For me, gaming is I like to be the competition, but I like to, the big thing is playing the game. It's enjoying the game. It's enjoying the struggle.
Right.
And the fact that, go back to player elimination, the fact that you get kicked out of a game, that just adds more spice to your exit, that just adds to that for me. It doesn't make the fact that I've lost the game feel any worse to me. It's just, I just enjoy that, I suppose. The thing that annoys me most in game design is hidden victory points. I mentioned that in the last blog post.
Right.
That just pisses me off for the most part. Sometimes it's used well, but the number of times you see it, it's just a cover-up for what's basically would otherwise be a broken design is just untrue.
Can you give us some examples of games that use that mechanism, the hidden victory points?
Well, Puerto Rico is a game that uses it well, in my opinion. I think that's a pretty good game. A game that... No, I think is the answer to that.
Yeah, I was trying to give some people examples of those type of games. Tell us what you're playing right now, some of your top games.
Okay, well, I'm playing a lot of games by email at the moment. I do play face to face, but I have young kids and it's difficult for me to get out and about too much. What am I playing right now? I'm playing Friedrich, really enjoying that. I'm playing War of the Ring for the first time, which is surprising. It took me so long to get round to that because I'm a big Tolkien fan, and that's shaping up to be a pretty interesting game too. I'm playing a lot of Twilight Struggle. I'm really sold on Twilight Struggle at the moment.
I wanted to ask you about that. I saw that I had my first game of that this week, I'm not sure exactly what it was. More of a learning game for me, it certainly was enjoyable. I think it was a tad long, but maybe it's just because I didn't know what I was doing. what are your thoughts on Twilight Struggle?
Well, there's a lot of things I like about Twilight Struggle. I think one of the nice things about Twilight Struggle is that it appeals to all types of different gamers. If you want to sit and do analysis, you can sit and do analysis, you know, where the way the influence spreads slowly across the map, and you can kind of calculate that and try and work out where you need to be next, and you can do the whole analysis thing if that's what turns you on. If you want to be an adrenaline junkie, there's loads of dice rolls there that aren't moderated by combat resolution tables or anything like that. You just roll the dice and you hope for the best. If you're more of a war gamer, there's loads of history there in the card, actually learn some history as you play, you turn the cards over, it tells you a bit about the event happened in the past. And what's really nice about it is that they're all plausible routes to victory. You can play any one of those three ways and you can win. You'll do best if you combine all three, but you can go any way you want, and you can and there's creative strategy in there too with the card play. There's just so much in there. Almost any approach you want to take to playing that game, it will pay off for you.
Tell me on that game, what do you think? What percentage is luck, and what is skill on that game?
I have a big thing about this actually, because I struggle with this a lot, because I like luck in games. I wouldn't be an Ameritrash gamer if I didn't like luck in games. It adds so much to a game.
I agree.
And but at the same time, I'm of the opinion that you don't want games to be dominated by luck, you know. Otherwise, we're all playing snakes and ladders or whatever.
Exactly.
And that's tedious. So I think there's a percentage, and I think the sweet spot of luck in a game is where you can throw games down to the luck about 10 to 20% of the time, somewhere between those. More than that, then the advantage you get from luck, the excitement, the kind of like the feeling hanging on, hoping for that good roll, goes out the window because you know it's unlikely to happen.
Right.
You know, makes higher than 20%, you know, then you're starting to get in a territory of, well, you know, this is a game that just rewards to roll the dice too many times, and especially if it's a long game, I'm less likely to be interested. I think Twilight Struggle, probably around the 15% mark, I think it's pretty much in the sweet spot for that too.
That's interesting. Now, you mentioned playing by email games. Is that very satisfying for you? How is that working out for you?
Most part, I'd much rather play face-to-face. There are some games. One of the reasons I've been playing a lot of Twilight Struggle, not only do I think it's a great game, but it actually plays really well via email, because you can sit and you think carefully about your hand and how those cards are going to relate to what you're going to do, and how they can have impact on each other and what your opponent's doing. Most games, especially the games like the Ameritrash games, you want that immediacy. You know, you want to be there, you want to be able to roll the dice and see the numbers come up and just have that satisfaction right there. And I also like games that have like negotiation, diplomatic elements, and you don't get any of that in PBM. So it's okay. It fills the gap for the time being. When I first had kids, when I first had really young kids, I tried to fill the gaming gap by just buying loads of games.
Right.
And that was a really bad idea.
I went through that as well.
they just sat around and were unplayed and made me feel even worse about just having loads of unplayed games in my attic if I was just itching to play these damn games.
Right.
So I stopped doing that and started doing the play by email game instead, and that's better. But it doesn't match up to gaming face to face. I do it. I try to get out about once a month and play a couple of games at the moment.
Now, you mentioned Tolkien before. What's your top Lord of the Rings game? Do you like Lord of the Rings Confrontation?
I've never played Lord of the Rings Confrontation. I think a lot of the Lord of the Rings games are either crap or they totally failed to capture the flavor of the books.
Now, have you played the Kinesia Lord of the Rings game?
That's a woeful game. That's a bad game. I really don't like that game.
I agree with you on that.
Good. I'm glad you do, because, you know, Michael Barnes, he started agreeing with me, and now he's changed his mind on that. So
I think he's back at calling it a 10 now. I think he rated it. He thinks it's a brilliant. I think it's one of the worst games ever.
And I wouldn't go that far, but it's not a game that I gave my copy away.
I tend to exaggerate, Matt, but you know, it is a bad game. I do agree. Yeah. What don't you like about it?
Well, partly is what I just said. I find that it completely fails to capture the flavor of the books. You know, you're there and you're exchanging.
It's a long time I played.
I can't quite remember how it works, but you're exchanging tokens. You know, you're basically saying, you know, oh, you know, I'm going to be your mate. Here's a friendship token. I'm going to be, you know, fight somebody. Here's a sword token. How exciting is that?
If you saw the movies, you saw the huge battles, and it doesn't capture any of that.
Not at all. But the other thing I don't like about it is that as a cooperative game, it falls completely flat for me. I think a lot of cooperative games have this problem where they are just dominated by the person who knows or thinks they know how to play it the best.
Right. What do you think of Shadows of Camelot?
I've never played Shadows of Camelot, but from what I know about it, it's kind of solved that to some extent because you've got the traitor rules in there.
Yes.
So often you find you're playing against somebody.
Right.
But a lot of cooperative games are lame. I don't play cooperative games to cooperate. I play games to win. I play games to be competitive.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought it was in Shadows of Camelot, the interesting twist with the traitor there, where the traitor could win. You're right. I think it did solve it. But a lot of criticism on that game was it's just a rummy game.
Mm.
But it was definitely a beautiful game, and I had fun with it there at first. Tell me, you mentioned you don't get out. Have you ever been to any conventions? Have you been to the U.S.?
No, I've never been to any conventions, and I've never been to the U.S. I went to Canada a couple of years ago, which is kind of probably as meaningful to you as somebody saying to me, oh, hi, I went to Scotland a few years ago, and I know exactly what England's like. So I won't go down that route. But I'll say it again, gaming is primarily a social thing. Most of the people I game with are my friends, and they're my friends first and my gaming buddies second. So it kind of makes going to conventions a bit of a waste of time. I'm not that interested in playing games with strangers. Even the play-by-email games I play, I have regular play-by-email opponents.
Right.
And the other thing about going to conventions is that people do is that they keep on top of all the latest releases. You know, it's like what's coming up. They get to play something 3 months before it's released or whatever and take a look at that and check it out. And I'm not bothered about that either. I don't particularly aspire to be a collector and own loads of games. So when it comes to buying games, I prefer to wait 6 months, see what some of the reviews are in after it's been released, and make a judgment after there's a lot of opinion around about it, so I can make a good judgment.
I was debating whether to ask you this question or not, but I'm curious on your opinion. Your opinion on the banning of Michael Barnes.
Oh, okay. I'm going to make a really... Well, some of this may be interesting, some of it may be tedious. The bottom line with the banning of Michael Barnes is that since Aldi took over the Geek to pay his wages, basically, since it became a commercial interest for me, I am happy to defend his right to do whatever the hell he likes on that site. Interestingly, before he did that, I would have been very vocally against banning Michael Barnes.
Right.
But as I understand it, now I'm not big on the whole Board Game Geek politics thing. I don't know all the stuff that goes on. I don't hang around the forums there a lot.
Right.
But I understand the bottom line was that Tom Vasel threatened that if Aldi didn't kick out Michael Barnes, he was going to leave. Is that right?
That's a theory that's going around. It hasn't been confirmed, though. But I was just interested in that. I think you may have commented a time or two on that, but I can't remember. Can't recall what you said.
Okay, well, fine. But I mean, the point is that if from Aldi's point of view, a lot more people on that site prefer Tom Vasel's contributions to Michael Barnes. And if I was faced with that decision and that site was paying my wages, you know, I wouldn't have had a lot of choice. I think it's really sad that he got banned. I think it's a really unfortunate decision. I think it's a bit pathetic, really, that it's had to come down to that, you know. I mean, surely this is a disagreement, whatever it was, that could have been resolved in a somewhat more amicable fashion. Because he had a lot of useful things to say about gaming. You know, he contributed a lot of stuff, good stuff, to that site.
Right, I agree. Can you tell me where you disagree with Michael the most on a game or a point of view? Something he's read.
Well, I think probably the game that I disagree with him most about is Power Grid, I think. I'm really not sold on Power Grid. I think, did he give that a 10? I don't know. He was certainly a very highly rated game. I'm really not a fan of Power Grid, and I can't. With a lot of games that other people play, I can kind of see their appeal.
It's funny you brought that up. I just played that this week as well. What do you have against Power Grid?
Power Grid is an exercise in adding up. that's it.
Yes. That's been my criticism on a lot of the Euro games is that they're like accounting exercises.
Well, yeah, but at least in a lot of Euro games, they go to some effort to try and hide it. Power Grid just doesn't bother. It's all printed right there on the board. The value of everything and the price of everything is there. You can just sit there with a calculator and punch in those numbers, and if you're prepared to do the calculation far enough ahead, you're going to win the game.
Right. Well, I don't want to talk with you too long here before my phone bill goes through the roof. But you're coming through great. It's great talking to you. Tell me, if we have this Ameritrash convention, what are the odds of getting you to come over to it?
Oh, nil.
Nil?
No,
oh,
I'm not,
come on.
I'm not coming to the States. I don't do conventions. I've already said that. I'm not coming to the States just to go to a convention. I've thought one day, I'm going to go to the States one of these days. I'll go on holiday there, and I'll have to drop in and see a couple of the people, some of the well-known people from the Geek and whatnot,
right,
who own gaming stores over there.
Okay. All right, well, Matt, great talking to you.
Well, it's nice talking to you as well. I thought it was about time you had somebody with a decent accent on your show.
Exactly. I love your accent. Fantastic. How does my accent go on over there?
I think best not get into that, really.
I was thinking earlier today about this, and it dawned on me
that one of the reasons you phoned me is because you had Ken Bradford on the phone a couple of weeks ago, and that was an interesting show, and I listened to that. And
right.
He kind of fingered me as the guy who'd started Fortress of Maritash, and I thought, Christ, he's dropped me into talking to a Texan redneck for an hour.
What's the English word for redneck over there?
Oh, chav.
Ooh, that sounds bad.
I don't know where it comes from. I don't know what it means, but yeah, chav is the word.
Ah, okay.
Chav culture you talk about a lot. The people that hang around on street corners with their baseball caps turned backwards and drinking out of bottles of Diamond White.
I'll have to try that. Thanks a lot, Matt.
I hope you enjoy it if you do.
Okay. Great talking to you.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
What's new, pussycat? Tell me really where it's at, baby. Yeah, baby. Beautiful delight, a little evil smile. She's not a lady, but maybe. If I was Tom Jones, I wouldn't even have to care. The only problem I would have is dodging women's underwear.
Thank you, Matt Thrower. Great interview with Matt. Good talking with somebody over in England. I have a lot of people that send me email from over in the UK, and we appreciate that email. You know, speaking of Tom Jones, Matt said he actually knew Tom Jones, and he was going to do his rendition of What's New, Pussycat, but, you know, we lost the connection there right at the... Yeah, I don't know what happened. We just lost the connection, and he couldn't do that. When it's a big loss, but we'll have to live with that. Thank you again, Matt. I want to tell you folks that we got one more show to do for season two. Next week will be the season finale. I try to do 8 shows. There's about 2 months on with the Ultimate Podcast, and I got to take some time off, which I'm going to do in June. I'm going to be on vacation in June. So we got one more show to do for you, and then we're going to take some time off before season 3 comes back of the Ultimate Podcast. And I want to thank everybody for listening. Thanks again to Mr. Steel Wind for posting that on Board Game Geek. I appreciate that. For getting the word out on the Ultimate Podcast. Until next time, thanks a lot.